What happened to music that meant something?
The Who at the Kingdom or Kiss at the Coliseum. Where is the Misty Mountain Hop? Where is the smoke on the water? Where is the Iron Man of today?
Hey, this is not a test. This is rock and roll.
Welcome to Sound Opinions from Chicago Public Radio and American Public Media. I'm Jim DeRogatis, the pop music critic at the Chicago Sun-Times.
And I'm Greg Kot. I write about rock and roll for the Chicago Tribune. Today on the world's only rock and roll talk show, our annual Thanksgiving turkey shoot with the most disappointing albums of the year and our holiday gift guide for your music-loving friends.
Plus, we'll have reviews of new albums by Jay-Z and Tom Waits. You're listening to Sound Opinions. Now some music news.
Every time it rains, I think of you. And that's the time I feel so blue. When the rain
That is the voice of the first great R&B singer of the modern era, Ruth Brown. Dead at the age of 78, she was living in Las Vegas, died of complications of a heart attack and a stroke that she suffered recently. Jim, a lot of people saw that Ray Charles movie a couple of years ago, and they thought, well, Ray Charles, he's the guy that put Atlantic Records on the map. He's the guy who really invented rhythm and blues. A lot of people thought, though, that R&B stood for Ruth Brown. She was the one who put rhythm and blues on the map. There was no female R&B singer that could touch her. Dinah Washington was her only true peer throughout the 50s. She had hit after hit for Atlantic Records, including that song, Teardrops from My Eyes. She also had Mama, He Treats Your Daughter Mean, 5, 10, 15 Hours, hit after hit. Finally, they ran out in the early 60s. The Beatles happened. The British Invasion happened. Ruth Brown's career went backward. She had a period of genuine destitution there where, you know, guess what? The record company wasn't paying her any royalties.
Yeah, well, the same old story. It's a tragedy and largely forgotten today, but not by us.
She did make a comeback, we should point out. I mean, who can forget her role as Motormouth Mabel in the John Waters movie, Hairspray?
Yeah,
Anybody who saw that movie, Ruth Brown stole the movie. And then she went on to a career in Broadway where she won a Tony Award for the Black and Blue production. So she did have a comeback in her later years and ended up championing artists' rights and getting some of those royalties back from Atlantic Records finally. She was one of the leading advocates for having these artists' contracts honored by the record companies. And Atlantic eventually in the late 80s did fess up and start paying people like Ruth Brown their money. So a champion on two fronts, great R&B singer and a champion for artists' rights and women's rights over the last half century. Ruth Brown, dead at the age of 78.
You're listening to Sound Opinions. We're going to be shooting some Thanksgiving turkeys shortly, as well as giving you a holiday gift guide. First, we have some album reviews, Greg, and this one qualifies as a news story. You are two dudes, two feet, places, young,
H-O-T. Let's go get him again, Jeff.
Oh, my God.
Come on. Pop sped off, left mom with a bundle of joy. Your boy smack dab in the jungle, took tunnel vision, but he would soon become immobile. But first he bought that crack back like the yo-yo.
Jay-Z is unretired. That is Sean,
what a shock.
Sean Carter, a.k.a. Jigga, a.k.a. Hova, a.k.a. many other names. I can't even keep track. That's a song called Oh My God from Jay-Z's first album since 2003's The Black Album. The new record's called Kingdom Come. I got to say, this is one of the most hyped but least real retirements in the history of popular music. With much ado and a concert at Madison Square Garden, he bowed out of the music world, concluding that 30 was too old to be a rapper. And besides, he had better things to do, take Beyonce out and count his millions, run his different corporations, run a label now. He's running Def Jam. And he bowed out, except for the fact that he did come back and do that Best of Both Worlds tour and two albums with R. Kelly. But everybody's forgetting about that and saying this is Jay's comeback. One of the great voices in hip-hop history. You know, a master of rhythm, a master of flow, a truly wonderful rapper. The content is something we can talk about in the review segment here after we play a little of this new album because, man, he sounds great, but what does he have to say? Let's play a track called 30-something. You know, hip-hop has a lifespan of about 5 minutes. An artist puts out an album. If they're lucky, they have a second, right, and then they're confined to the dustbin of history. Jay, in this song, 30-something, is saying 30 is the new 20, which methinks he's protesting a bit much in the way that the Rolling Stones have ever since like the late 70s. You know,
60 is the new 20.
We ain't that. Yeah, well, you know, you hear Richards these days, John Lee Hooker played until his 80s. You know, why can't I? That's kind of what Jay-Z is doing here at the ripe old age of 36. It's a track called 30-something from Jay-Z's Kingdom Come.
International. Show young boys how to do this thing. The maturation of Jay-Z. Check me out. 30's the new 20. I'm so hot still. Better bra, better automobile. Better yard, no. Better 100 mil. Then buy the songs and I probably start another trend. I know everything you want to. I did all that by the age of 21. By 22, I had that brand new act cool. I guess you could say that my legend just begun. I'm young enough to know the right car to buy, yet grown enough not to put rims on it. I got that six deuce with curtains so you can't see me, and I didn't even have to put tents on it. I don't got the bright watch, I got the right watch. I don't buy out the bar, I bought the night spot. I got the right stock, I got stockbrokers that's moving it like white tops. I know you like, this is child abuse, call diapers. I might just be getting nicer. You young boys ain't ready for real. 30's the new 20, I'm so hot. Used to let my pants sag, not giving a fuck. Baby boy, now I'm all grown up. I used to cruise the used car lot, put chrome in the truck. Baby boy, now I'm all grown up. I used to play the block like that. I used to carry knots like that. Now I got black cards, good credit and such. Baby boy, cause I'm all grown up. 30's the new 20, looking I'm on fire still.
That is 30-something from the new Jay-Z record, Kingdom Come. The worst retirement in history, as you said, Jim.
Yeah.
And Jay-Z, in fact, has used those exact words to describe it. Yeah, I really didn't go away. I was always thinking about coming back. He's coming back for, you would think, because he has something urgent to say. I just had to get all this stuff off my chest.
Yeah.
And he sort of circles around a few topics. There's a song about Hurricane Katrina. There's a song about his relationship with Beyonce, which doesn't seem to be going as well as he would like on this record because he says that she's spending way too much time on her career. He can sort of understand it because she's only 23 and, you know, yeah, she should be obsessed with her career, but I wish she was more obsessed with me. So there's a little bit of introspection coming.
Very
in this
little. I mean, even the Katrina song is, mm-hmm, is one verse, basically.
But 30-something is the key track on the record, as you said. It's a track that's basically saying, okay, I'm older, but I'm still a hustler. I'm still in touch with the streets. I still want to buy really expensive stuff. And now I'm the Donald Trump of hip-hop, so I can buy that great stuff.
Well, now he knows enough not to put the gaudy rims on his new luxury. That's actually half a song he's talking about, how he doesn't muck up his new luxury automobile. He turned to some of the best producers in hip-hop, some of the top-dollar names, Dr. Dre, Kanye West, Pharrell Williams, Just Blaze. They sound as uninspired as he does. My problem with Hova's career has been as he rose from the streets, he had less and less of interest to talk about. It was all about, I'm a great businessman, I'm a great businessman, I'm really rich. You know, now he's at the top of his game. He's not only in all the VIP lounges, he's in the corporate boardrooms. There's no challenge anymore. And to hear him say again and again and again, I'm back, again and again and again, I'm rich.
I mean,
who cares? You know, have you got anything better? The grooves are kind of phoned in, but even worse, I really blame Jay-Z because he's not talking about anything of interest to really anybody.
Yeah, I have to say, this is probably Jay-Z's worst record, and I was really surprised by that because I thought, you know, it qualifies as one of our turkeys of the year, Jim, I think.
Yes, this is an early turkey shoot.
You would expect Jay-Z, a guy with more money than just about everybody except God, could make any kind of record he wants, hire anyone money could buy, get the best beats in the world, and think up the best rhymes. And yet, he does seem incredibly bored on this record.
No, and Just Blaze, who's a great producer, actually has that one track where he's sampling cliche of all cliches in hip-hop, Super Freak by Rick James. It's like, hello, MC Hammer? Is that even a comparison that Jay wants to make? I mean, because, you know, it's a fine line between Hammer and Jay on this record.
It's really, really disappointing. And as you said, when he was hustling on the streets and talking about making money, there was sort of an adventure to it. Like, he hasn't got all this money yet, but he's striving for it.
Yeah.
And there was sort of this ambition of the ghetto hustler trying to make his way in the world. Now that he's got all this money, it just sounds like he's rubbing it in our face.
Yeah.
And it's just not as interesting anymore.
Even the track where he's telling us he loves his mom, you know, he's done before. I got to say, on the Buy It, Burn It, Trash It rating scale at Sound Opinions, this is a Trash It record.
Yeah, it's a huge disappointment. I think Jay-Z's made some brilliant records in the past, but this is a huge fall off for him. It's a Trash It record for me as well. Well, that could only be one man, only one voice like that in current popular music. If you could call what Tom Waits does popular music, it is it is Tom Waits music. That's the only way to describe it. That is Sea of Love, a cover, of course, but Tom Waits does it his own special way on a triple CD called Orphans. He divides it into three separate CDs, Brawlers, Ballers, and Bastards. This record began as sort of an excavation of the Waits archives over the last 25 years. Let's bring together these sort of stray tracks from various projects, you know, one-off type soundtrack songs, songs from tribute albums, songs from plays and theater projects that he'd been working on. So he gathered those together, and there was about 24 of those songs. And he said, meanwhile, I'm working on all this other stuff in the studio, so let's throw those in here as well. He's got 30 new recordings on this record, as well as the 24 strays from throughout his career. So what we end up with, you know, is 54 songs.
Greg Kot, as writers, both of us will champion the fact that we need editors. There is no such thing as a great writer who doesn't need an editor. Man, in the music world, I'm hard-pressed to think of anybody who needs an editor more than Tom Waits.
All right, you're laying your cards on the table a little bit early, Jim. Let's play one of these 54 songs before we jump into our review of the new Tom Waits record.
You're going to give us a brawler, a bowler, or a bastard?
I am going to go with one of the ballers, a ballad from Tom Waits, Such As It Is. And it's a good one, in my opinion. A song called World Keeps Turning, one of the new songs from this record, which includes 30 new songs in addition to the 24 oldies that he compiles here. It's World Keeps Turning from Tom Waits from the new record Orphans on Sound Opinions.
On our anniversary, someone else where you used to be. The world don't care, and yet it clings to me. And the moon is gold and silvery. Who knows where the sidewalk ends, or the road will turn and the can anyone believe it all? Well, the band has stopped playing, but we keep dancing. The world keeps turning. The world keeps turning. On his hand he wore the ring of another.
Tom Waits, World Keeps Turning, one of the ballers on his new Orphans set. Greg, I hate Tom Waits. I used to love Tom Waits, hate Tom Waits now. And you know it, and you did this to me as a torture thing, and it's just mean and cruel of you. This is more Tom Waits than anybody needs. I think he's betrayed his talent. That is one of the better songs on this record. Back circa Swordfish Trombones when he was doing the boozy barroom ballads, you know, there was melody and there was thought and there was not shtick. The other two discs here, The Brawlers and The Bastards, he's become this caricature of himself, and it was a cartoon character to begin with. That track, you know, they're serving fish in the jailhouse tonight for 5 minutes.
Some fish in the jailhouse tonight. All right. Look at you. Fish in the jailhouse.
It's rehashed Captain Beefheart, Fractured Blues, art rock,
that's
with him doing this boho, silly, I'm this weird, eccentric, dangerous, dirty old man character. This is way more Tom Waits than I ever want to get in my life.
The Beefheart comparison is just an easy reach. I mean, there's a vague similarity in the way their vocals sound, but I think there's no similarities between them at all.
It's all about the rhythm. It's all about that fractured rhythm, that syncopated rhythm, blues turned inside out and sent to Mars.
You know, there's a theatrical element of what Waits is doing. He's creating characters, and he's singing in those characters' voices. I mean, the way he uses his voice on this record is really remarkable. I think he's creating a different character for almost each song on this record. The dirty old uncle reading the bedtime story to his kids. And you've got this sad 19-year-old kid on the bus, you know, looking outside the bus window and wondering where his life is going to go. I think the way he's able to create these little worlds in each of these songs is really unique and different. I mean, it's not at all what Beefheart was doing. The sonics on this record are really interesting in that he creates, again, musicians and uses instruments that help him create these worlds. Dividing up the record into three categories like this is kind of a bold stroke on his part. There's a lot of music here, but to my mind, it not only is a summary of his career, I think it's one of the best things he's done in the last 20 years. You mentioned Swordfish Trombones.
You're a groupie.
I think this is one of the best records he's made. Yeah, he's.
You think it's as good as 1983 Swordfish Trombones?
I think he's one of the standout artists of our time. I think these are great songs. I think at the heart of it, he's a great songwriter.
Oh,
Beefheart was not a great songwriter. He was a great performer.
He's a great musician.
Waits is a great songwriter.
It's the whole theater thing kills me. You know, let him go to the theater. Let him keep it there, for goodness sakes. I'm tired of your act, buddy. We've heard 17 dirty old uncle songs from him. I don't need another one.
No, they're not 17 dirty old uncle stories.
Yeah, there are. The guy's just
There's
put
not.
Out. And he needs an editor. He needs an editor, you know, badly. This doesn't need
His
to be
wife,
three
His wife, Kathleen Brennan, is a great editor, I think. She's one of the people that have influenced
you
this
ever
record.
Let Deb Codd edit you? I don't think it's not a good idea to be edited by your
if
wife.
You can make children together, you can edit songs together. Come on.
Buy it, burn it, trash it is the way we rate things, Greg. I have no use for this record. I have no use for Tom Waits. Maybe someday when I'm old and boring and literary and
care about
bus windows and all that stuff you're talking about, I'll grow into an appreciation, but I doubt it.
Well, once you become adult, let me know, and then you'll want to buy several copies of this Tom Waits record for yourself.
Coming up on Sound Opinions from Chicago Public Radio and American Public Media, it's our annual turkey shoot, the most disappointing albums of the year, paired with something more uplifting, the holiday gift guide, stuff to buy the music lover on your Christmas list.
And do the turkey hop.
Do the turkey hop.
Boy, when you start,
you don't want to stop.
If you want to be slick,
you will grab a chick.
Then do the turkey hop.
And never stop.
You want the blue, you learn to do
turkey hop.
Pull out your chest, pull in your neck,
and your knees will do the rest.
Let's do the turkey hop.
Do the turkey hop.
Boy, when you start,
you won't want to stop.
If you want to be slick,
you will grab a chick.
Then do the turkey hop.
And never stop.
Thank you.
Welcome back to Sound Opinions from Chicago Public Radio and American Public Media. I'm Jim DeRogatis. He's Greg Kot. This is our annual Thanksgiving turkey shoot. Greg, a brief explanation. These are not just lousy albums. These are lousy albums that we truly hoped and expected, had reason to believe would be very good albums. Because we hear a lot of disappointing music, and that's not unusual here on Sound Opinions. That's our job. We review it every week. But these are albums that it still breaks our heart that they were as bad as they turned out to be.
Indeed. I cannot tell you how much anticipation we have for the really bad albums. We just know. We can smell them a mile away.
Yeah.
But these are the albums we looked ahead to and said, you know what? This has got a chance to be really great. In fact, based on the track record of this particular artist, I'm thinking it could be one of the albums of the year.
Yeah.
Then you put it on and you go, what is this? It's a horrible record right from the start. It gets worse and worse every time you play it.
Well, we don't want to torture people unduly because some of these we've reviewed. So we're just going to sample little bits and pieces of them until we build to our ultimate turkey of the year. We're in agreeance, as Fred Durst would say, on the turkey of the year.
A past winner of the Turkey of the Year Award. We shouldn't
mind. Never did anything but turkey. All right, what do you got?
All right, I would have to say one of my biggest disappointments of the year was this solo record by Pharrell Williams, one half of the Neptunes. To my mind, the Neptunes were one of the most inventive production teams of the last 5 to 10 years, not the least of which their work with Kalis. I mean, the work with that artist alone, I think,
she's
qualified
great.
Them as serious contenders for some of the most inventive producers, right up there with Timbaland in my mind, in terms of being able to consistently reinvent themselves and reinvent the artists that they work with. So Pharrell goes out on his own, and you can start to see the ego starting to creep in. The Neptunes have started to sag off a little bit, and you're kind of wondering what's going on there. Pharrell is clearly itching to do a solo record. Okay, he's going to put all his energy into that thing. It's going to be really great. He puts out this thing called In My Mind, and it is a turkey. I mean, it is a huge disappointment. We talked about Jay-Z sounding bored on his record. I'm wondering what Pharrell was up to. I mean, his head seemed to be in a different spot when he made this record. He's all about these left-turn beats and these heady melodies, and there's none of that here. There's all this turmoil supposedly underneath the surface. I don't hear any of it. I just hear a really mediocre or worse hip-hop record by an artist who I think has kind of completely lost the plot after a really promising stretch of hits.
I must have hurt your feelings. Your temper hit the ceiling. You know I want to talk to you. But the main thing is living. Cause God knows it's not giving. You know I got lots to do. So honey, if you with me, know I work for your pretty face to smile when I get home.
And women make love, you know it's gonna be your
baby. Cause you're my number one.
Baby girl, you and me, smash it, that's a hit to me.
And Jim, I think a track that's a classic example of this is the track Number One, where he's collaborating with Kanye West. When you see Pharrell Williams and Kanye West on a track together, you're thinking, man, this is gonna be great. They're really gonna challenge each other, really test each other. And then you listen to Number One, you go, what? It's a huge letdown, and I think it's symbolic of how this record sets up expectations and then just one by one knocks them down.
Yeah.
Conversations with my 13-year-old self. Conversations with my 13-year-old self.
All right, Craig, we're listening to my first turkey of the year. That is Alicia Moore, otherwise known as Pink. It is a track called Conversations with My 13-Year-Old Self, which is a bombastic mini rock opera from her fourth album, I'm Not Dead. Now, some people would scoff and say, you know, what did you expect from Pink to begin with? But I will champion Pink's first couple of albums. She was the anti-Britney of the bubblegum pop world. She, you know, Courtney Love, attitude, riot girl, spirit to spare without the self-destruction, brains and sex appeal. She had it all, and she crafted some really great records. Stupid Girls, the first single from this disc, was going in a good direction because she was taking no prisoners, taking on Britney and Paris Hilton and Lindsay Lohan and all those sex pod babes. And, you know, it's saying, look, girls, think for yourself. Don't be like this. Don't be a stupid girl. The rest of the album, unfortunately, all of a sudden she becomes Bono.
Dear Mr. President, were you a lonely boy? How can you say no child is left behind We're not dumb and we're not blind. They're all sitting in your cells while you pave the road to hell.
Dear Mr. President is a track that she's crafting with the Indigo Girls, telling the Bush administration what to do. It's like, look, Pink, I think you're a little out of your league. Broke my heart, this record. I wanted to like Pink again.
Right, that's a little bit of the new metal band Tool from its latest record, 10,000 Days. And it gives you an example of just how slow and sleepy and dreamy.
Lasts about 10,000 days.
Oh, wake me up when this review's over, Jim, okay, will you? I mean, 10,000 Days, the new record from Tool, huge disappointment to me because I think this had been one of the leading edge metal bands of the last decade. Their last record, Lateralus, blew me away. Mm-hmm. I think their drummer, Danny Carey, is just a genius. And those 10 megaton riffs that the guitar player, Adam Jones, was coming up with, they had this incredible sense of dynamics on their early stuff. This record has no dynamics. Where did Danny Carey go? Where did those megaton riffs from Adam Jones go?
It's all plodding, yeah.
It's very plodding. It's a slow-moving record. It's very dreamscapey. Okay, they don't want to repeat themselves, but this is not at all what I was expecting from one of metal's best bands. I think it's much too dominated by the vocalist Maynard James Keenan. Talking about his mother and talking about 10,000 Days is essentially named after her long struggle with an illness, and he's elevating her to sainthood on this record. All well and good, but geez, did it have to be so ponderous? Really, a real disappointment from this really great metal band. I really hope they come back, but 10,000 Days is one of the huge disappointments of the year.
I'm going to stay on the metal tip, Greg, and talk about a band that continually lets me down, although it never has as much as on this record, Revelations. Audioslave.
My city sleeps by the side of the freeway. The city scraps in the winter time. She wore a yellow coat. Now there's nothing on her back if a building falls. You wouldn't care to know. Unless you rent it, then no one cares about climbing stairs. Nothing at the top no more. Outside tripping in the broken city.
I cannot understand how you have a group with so much talent, primarily in the part of Tom Morello. Grew up in the Illinois suburbs here, Chicago suburbs. He is reinventing rock guitar. He has this arsenal of sounds that are part music concrete, you know, the sound of bulldozers and cement mixers, and part hip-hop, you know, the sound of turntables and scratching, mixed in with your classic metal riffing, Black Sabbath and Led Zeppelin. The guy's a genius, except he has no taste because he's continually putting great guitar parts into lousy, lousy songs, and never more so than when he took the rhythm section of Rage Against the Machine, his old group, and linked up with Chris Cornell of Soundgarden. I gotta say it right here now. The grunge nostalgia thing is starting, and people are getting wistful, thinking back about the night. You know, look, Soundgarden sucked.
Oh, weepy-eyed
about flannel.
Soundgarden
always sucked. Green River sucked. They were bad. They were not good. Soundgarden's a lousy band. Cornell is a ham dog.
Oh, come on.
They were not a lousy band. They were a bad band, and he's just, you know,
Black
melodramatic.
Black Hole Sun's a bad song? Come on.
Well, except for Black Hole. Black Hole Sun. All right, except for Black Hole Sun, they were a bad band. But anyway, look, you got to even admit, even if you like them, he's been so lousy in Audioslave that he's tarnished anything he ever did before, especially on songs like Original Fire. He's got the Original Fire inside. He's excited. He's full of fire. He's ready to riot. He's going to riot. He said riot and fire are like repeated about 17,000 times on this record, and it's like, No way. Who are you kidding? You can say, you can croon those words all you want, but there ain't no fire, it ain't no riot.
The way I look at it with this band, Jim, is Cornell was a great fit for Soundgarden, that slow, sludgy sound. Rage Against the Machine had the perfect vocalist for them, sort of that swinging rap rock thing that they were doing. You put those two together, they shouldn't go together. They don't belong together, and it's clear from this record. I think you're right. I think they wore out their welcome with it.
Bad record.
All right, Jim, at least Audioslave, though, has a little bit of punch. At least they're trying to rock out. The record that is a huge turkey for me this year, and you may scoff, why would you anticipate this record at all, was the David Gilmour solo record.
You see, why would you think that a solo album from a guy in Pink Floyd 25 years past their best would be worth anything?
Well, here's what I think. Gilmour seems to be in a great place headwise. He's very up. He's talking about with great deal of optimism about music again. We just came off this reunion of the four core members of the classic 70s Pink Floyd lineup at Live 8 last year. And I'm thinking, okay, there's some energy back in this group. There's some potential that maybe they get back together again. Certainly, Gilmour needs Roger Waters as a lyricist. And that collaboration could be magical. Instead, Gilmour gives us this record. Okay, I don't really need Waters. I'm going to do my own solo thing. It's going to be really great, right? No way. I mean, it's embarrassing. You're right. Husband-wife collaborations sometimes don't work.
Yeah.
And here's the proof. David Gilmour co-writing with his wife, Polly Sampson. She's giving Gilmour these Hallmark cards to sing. He's writing these drizzly, gray, rainy day kind of guitar parts over the top of them.
Shamelessly.
This album is a snooze, and it's really disappointing because Gilmour's out there on the road with a band that includes at least one Pink Floyd member.
And Phil Manzanera of Roxy Music.
And Roger Waters is out there on the road with a band that includes one Pink Floyd member. So I got to say, these guys collectively, they're the turkeys of the year. Get together, guys. We need the four core Pink Floyd members back together again. Instead of doing these separate tours, writing this lame music, make a real album again.
That's what I'd like for Christmas. Greg, that is an outtake from Born in the USA by Bruce Springsteen, except it was recorded by The Killers this year on a record called Sam's Town. It's called The River is Wild. Could you have a more Springsteen-esque title? All right, my expectations weren't that high. This was a band of modest pleasures. On their first five-times platinum album, Hot Fuss, The Killers came out of Las Vegas. You know, they were yet another band in the line of groups imitating the 80s mope pop, post-punk, new wave sound of Cure and the Smiths and all that. They were good. They had some hooks. They had some glam rock in the mix. Man, with Sam's Town, they read all the hype, all the press, and believed it and made this work of art where it's a tour of the dark underbelly of Las Vegas. Sam's Town is the name of a casino, and it's got all this Kerouac Springsteen kind of let me tell you about the working class, the underbelly, the dark side of life. And what a load of hooey. Because this guy, Brandon Flowers, who is the main singer and songwriter and sometimes keyboardist, he is trying for this kind of beat persona, and instead he comes off like Kyle MacLachlan in Showgirls. I cannot take this guy seriously. He is so sleazy, so egotistical, such a cartoon character. Not even the production of Alan Moulder and Flood, who have crafted some of the most amazing sounding albums of the last two decades. Ride, My Bloody Valentine, The Smashing Pumpkins. Nothing could save this. This is a killer turkey.
Yeah, you're right. Roxy Music wannabes turning into Bruce Springsteen wannabes. That's not a good trade. Just didn't work out. But Jim, you and I have talked about this. There is clearly one standout. We are now going to go for our mutual Turkey of the Year.
Turkey of the Year,
I don't think there was a whole lot of argument about it this year. In past years, we have sort of debated this.
Yeah.
This time, I don't think there was much argument. We are talking about a group here that I think, for both of us, has produced some of the best albums of the last 10 years. I can't think of a single record of theirs in the past that I would dismiss. But man,
an 80-pound turkey. That's what they dropped on us this year, enough to feed the entire neighborhood.
Oh, my God. It's
Idlewild.
Unbelievable. Outkast is the group we're talking about, folks, the Atlanta duo of Andre Benjamin and Antoine Big Boy Patton. They have consistently made great music through the years. Six albums in a row that I think are terrific. The seventh album, an absolute turkey. 2 months out from this record, they were talking about this 30s period, Prohibition era soundtrack for a movie that they were making. It sounded like a dubious concept. How are they going to wedge hip-hop into Prohibition era music? And I thought, boy, if they can pull this off, they're going to be geniuses.
Could have been great.
And they didn't pull it off.
No.
I'm sorry. Andre 3000 trying to sing like Cab Calloway is not my idea of what this group should be doing. I think Antoine is the hip-hop center of this group. He has some nice moments on this record, but it's Andre Benjamin who has lost the plot. I think Andre, after the success that they've had over the last decade, thinks he can do just about anything. Well, I think he hit the glass ceiling. This is a total failure.
Oh, no, this
and
is
it's
up
one
there.
Of the most disappointing records of the last several years, not only
yeah,
this
no,
year.
Yeah, this is up there with like the Bee Gees remake of Sgt. Pepper's. in terms of hubris and complete and utter failure and just a bad idea from the get-go, poorly executed. It's a heartbreaker to say because they are a great group. They were a great group. They don't really seem to be much of a group anymore at all. They just seem to be this name. And I don't know. We were expecting better. Once again, we've had our hearts broken by popular music. but you know, Greg, if we couldn't care and cry and bleed and feel, it would be time not to do this anymore.
Exactly. So Thanksgiving's over. Finally, we have sated ourselves on some really, really bad music. It's time to play some good stuff, though, Jim, huh? Come on.
It is. It's time for our holiday season, winter solstice, time of the year gift guide. Whatever the occasion, just give somebody you love some good music. We're going to give you some ideas. I want to inject, though, Mr. Cott, if you disagreed with anything we said in the, in any show, in this show, any show, or you just want to tell us you love us, doesn't matter. We are always happy to hear from you at interact@soundopinions.org, or better yet, we're going to be starting a feedback segment where you can rant on the air just like we do. So call and leave us a voicemail message, 1-888-859-1800. We'll be right back on Sound Opinions from Chicago Public Radio and American Public Media.
Okay, people, tomorrow morning, 10 a.m., Santa's coming to town.
Santa! Oh, my God!
Santa here? I know him. I know him.
Welcome back to Sound Opinions from Chicago Public Radio and American Public Media. I'm Greg Cott of the Chicago Tribune. He's Jim DeRogatis of the Chicago Sun-Times. It is time for us to give you some gift-giving guides for the holidays. These are some recommendations we have for your music-loving friends. We're each going to go with some ideas. Jim, what do you got?
That's true. Well, you know, Greg, the CD box set bonanza of 10, 15 years ago has been dwindling because the record companies have pretty much mined their vaults of everything and anything you would think. And also because, you know, hey, most people today want to just download the music into their iPods. But you cannot wrap an MP3 track and put it under the Christmas tree or whatever your holiday occasion is. It's just too darn hard. There is still a need for some cool box sets, and I'm going to focus on those tonight. I don't know what else you've got under your gift guide. The first I'm going to talk about is a new box by The Clash. This is not one of those overview career retrospective box sets. It's a very particular Uber record collector geek box set. It's called The Singles. What it is all 19 original British singles released by what was once, happy to proclaim itself, the only rock and roll band that matters, replicated in their original 45 sleeves, little mini CD versions of what the original British punk singles, when you would buy them at Bleecker Bob's in New York on import.
Yeah, that's really cool.
As I did. Now, some people would be annoyed by this because, let's face it, there's the A side and the B side. Sometimes there's one or two extra tracks, a demo version or an alternate mix, but there's only like three or four songs on each CD. And after 19 times, you got to get up and go replace the CD in the changer. I don't care. This thing is well packaged. It's well annotated. There's a cool booklet. Those sleeves are killer. I mean, I would just like to frame them all, put them on my wall. I'm just happy I own this.
It makes the artwork.
If I got this for Christmas, I'd be thrilled. This is the first single by The Clash. It's White Riot. I think if you do burn all of these to one disc or put them in your iPod, you are going to have one of the all-time great punk rock primers and one of the best greatest hit sets ever. Second only, perhaps, and this is maybe my the fact that I'm an American, not a Brit, second only to Ramone's Mania, is The Clash, White Riot. White Riot by The Clash on my gift list is The Singles box.
Well, I notice, we're going for the expensive stuff here, Jim, and I think that's
You're worth it, Greg.
Good way to go. Yeah, thank you. If you could give me The Clash singles set, that would be pretty cool. And I, too, am going to gravitate toward box sets. I think these are just, it shows you care. It's not just a single CD. It's not just a burn of a bunch of MP3 files. A well-done box set. There's nothing more thrilling. Mm-hmm. I get to see that. Mm-hmm. Open up that gift box and say, wow, there's some really cool stuff in here. I think one of the most well-done box sets of recent years is this What It Is Funky Soul and Rare Grooves box set, which basically talks about obscure 60s and 70s funk and soul. We just had DJ Shadow on the show a couple of weeks ago, and he was talking about going through the crates and looking for these obscure songs for these classic breakbeats that he can incorporate into modern-day hip-hop songs mm-hmm. and totally blow people's minds with them. This is the source material for a good bunch of the hip-hop of the last 20, 30 years. There's some name artists on this box set. Curtis Mayfield's on here, Wilson Pickett, Little Richard. But they're not represented by their biggest hits. They're inevitably represented by some obscure, deep album cut or a B-side. And even better, by far dominated here by little-known acts like the Stovall Sisters. I mean, who are the Stovall Sisters? They're this gospel group from the late 60s, early 70s who recorded for Reprise. They've got an amazing track on here called Hang On In There that just blew my mind. There's this cousin of Ravi Shankar, Ananda Shankar, who did this acid raga version of the Rolling Stones' Jumpin' Jack Flash. And you go, wow, that is really cool.
Yeah.
This is the epitome of deep funk. Any DJ, anybody who's a baby boomer would probably have missed most of these tracks as they weren't around back then, but they're the equal, in many cases, of the classic tracks by people like Aretha Franklin and Otis Redding
and Marvin
Gaye.
I knew you'd be all over this. It actually looks like you on the cover there, that character with the afro.
The guy's got a fro just like I had
in college. Yeah.
I just need the sunglasses. I still don't look that cool. I wish I could. It is classic stuff. The track I'm going to play is one called Gossip. It's credited to Cyril Neville, but Cyril, who is, of course, the member of the Neville Brothers.
Yeah.
Yes. His older brother Art was in a little band called The Meters from New Orleans, and they are clearly backing him up on this track called Gossip on Sound Opinions. Gossip from this fantastic box set. Somebody give this to me for Christmas. I need an extra copy.
You already got it.
What it is. Funky Soul and Rare Grooves.
That's a good one, Greg. But I ceded it to you knowing you would be talking about it. This one I see in your stack, but I'm going to jump on it first. Rockin' Bones, 1950s punk and rockabilly. This is the second time Rhino Records, who are, of course, the champion compilation makers in the box set world, second time they've gone back to that 1950s period, trying to make the argument that rockabilly and the roots of punk and all that is raw and ragged and wonderful and lustful about rock and roll came in the 50s, and yet we have largely sanitized, declawed, defanged that music in the decades since. You know, I mean, Elvis Presley was once frightening, as well as sexy and inspiring and amazing, and so were all of his peers. And yet, 50s rock, as it comes to us today in popular culture, is just, it's beyond, it's like the soundtrack for commercials and just the worst, you know? It's got no guts, no glory, and it used to send politicians into paroxysms of panic. You know, there's going to be juvenile delinquents and rioting in the streets, and you listen to the music and that it still has that energy, except that we don't hear the good stuff. So the other attempt a couple of years ago was called Loud, Fast, and Out of Control, and that's a great box set. I think Rockin' Bones is almost as good. What it does is take your 50s gods, Elvis Presley, Carl Perkins, Buddy Holly, Jerry Lee Lewis, and so on, and put them in the company of people that were their peers and on the charts at the same time, who are long since forgotten, at least by baby boomers and us Generation Xers and certainly Gen Y. I'm talking names like Bob Lumen and Wanda Jackson and Freddie and the Hitchhikers. But you hear them in context, and it's all just revolutionary. Where did these people come from? These were the people from the backwoods and the country and coming up from the South, and they just – there's country in there, and there's rock and roll, and there's R&B, and there's rockabilly. It's this explosion of energy. I'm going to play a track called Action Packed by this guy, Ronnie D, a.k.a. Ronnie Dawson. And it's just killer. It's an example of the 100-some-odd songs on here, and they're all wonderful.
Give me the downbeat, Mastro. I want to lay it on the line. Because everything I do, I want to do it in double time. When I take a ride in my car, I let it roll. Hear me? I said let it roll. I like to feel that wind in my face, nice and cold. If you chicks are timid, you just better turn back. Because when I take a ride in my car, it's got to be action back. Hear me? Action back. Well, if your music's gonna move me, well, I've gotta feel the beat. Nothing slow for the heart, I want a beat for the feet. Hear me? I said beat for the feet. If you play it slow and easy, I can dig a lick like that. Well, if your music's gonna move me, it's gotta be action back.
Oh, yeah, that's Ronnie D, better known to his mom as Ronnie Dawson. It was just a late teen, you know, capturing the joy of his first car in Action Packed. Died in 2003. Greg was great on tour up until that point. He's remembered on Rockin' Bones, 1950s punk and rockabilly, that new box set from Rhino.
the roots of alternative country are right there, man. It's hillbillies with electric guitars.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a first time. You know, it's like it's a great idea. Whatever happened to that stuff?
Love it.
Great choice, Jim. We're in the midst of a gift guide for the holidays. Some excellent music for your music-loving friends that we can suggest to you. I'm going to stay in the 50s with you, Jim. A peer of a lot of those wild men who sang about booze and amphetamines and girls and fast cars. Jerry Lee Lewis knew all of the above intimately. He was imbibing in all of those at various points in his life, sometimes simultaneously. Everybody knows about his 50s hits with Sam Phillips at Sun Studios, and those have been well documented. But a half century of hits is exactly what it says. It's a box set that is the first comprehensive look at Jerry Lee Lewis's career. And a lot of people may not be aware of, well, what did this guy do after he did Great Balls of Fire and Whole Lot of Shaking Going On? But a lot of people may not realize that an equally impressive career in the 60s and early 70s, sort of morphing into this very credible country act. And I mean hardcore country act. I mean, we're not talking about a precursor of the Hat Acts of the 90s. We are talking about a peer of Hank Williams, because not only was he a peer of people like Elvis Presley, he came up right around the same time as Hank Williams. Just as Hank Williams was leaving this earth, Jerry Lee Lewis was starting to record, and he was clearly influenced by that Appalachian country sound, and you can hear it in his 60s recordings. He made some remarkable live recordings during that period, especially in Europe, and some of those are on this disc. Those are the ones I especially like. And his comeback efforts in the 80s and 90s, while very sporadic, there's some great stuff there as well. He would get in the studio with people like Bones Howe, people who really understood him, and there's a sprinkling of these on the third disc of this three-disc set. So the best career overview of one of the giants of rock and roll. And I'm going to gravitate towards one of the live tracks on here because you can really hear the energy of the killer, as they called him, in front of a live audience. He loved the show. He loved the audience being there right in his face. I saw him at a show at the Cubby Bear when the audience was sort of just lined up right in his face. This is a small club in Chicago. He just rose to the occasion. He loved that audience screaming at him, and he would get more intense. And
yeah, kicking over the piano stool.
And it was a shtick. Kicking over the stool was a bit of a shtick, but the frenzy with which he would turn that piano, those 88 keys, into an orchestra of sound was just remarkable to watch. And the hair's flying, and he, you know, he's got that leer on his face, and he's talking, you know, he's personalizing every song in a way that few artists could. Here's his version of High Heel Sneakers. It's from this remarkable box set, Jerry Lee Lewis on Sound Opinions.
Put on your high heel sneakers, pump that wig down on your head. Come on now, put on your high heel sneakers, honey. Why don't you comb that wig down on your head? Woo! I'll be going out tonight, baby. Oh, I'm pretty sure you're gonna knock on the door.
Jerry Lee Lewis, High Heel Sneakers. That was Greg's recommendation, that new Jerry Lee Lewis box set. I'm gonna add a companion to that, Greg. If you buy that box set for somebody and you go out and you buy Hellfire, the Jerry Lee Lewis story by Nick Tasches, which is one of the greatest books in the history of rock and roll, one of the best biographies I've ever read, period, of anyone. Boy, those two things under that's you're in. You're in with whoever you gave that gift to.
Yeah, Lewis doesn't get enough credit for the role he played in early rock and roll, and I think this kind of makes the case as well as Tasha's book. You can't get better than that for holiday gift giving.
Well, we only have time for one more gift, but I'm going to cede it to you because, A, I'm intrigued by what you have in front of you there, and, B, I got to play the Incredible String Band's Minotaur song last week. So
we're going to make
I've had enough indulgence.
We're going to make you pay for that, Jim. But you and I are both on record as most of this music we've reviewed at some point on
yes.
Sound Opinions. We've talked about this many a times. What it is basically a 12-CD guide to the early days of hip-hop, the golden age of hip-hop. It's the Tommy Boy Presents Hip-Hop Essentials, 1979 to 1991. 12 CDs, all the greatest hits of hip-hop in that first era. Well, not all of them, but certainly a lot of the significant ones. And to my mind, it goes back to an era, and obviously there's the political end of hip-hop in there. You can't avoid it with people like Grandmaster Flash and The Message and N.W.A., Blank the Police. But what it really says to me is how much fun early hip-hop was.
Yeah.
I mean, these guys were having a ball basically inventing an art form, taking bits and pieces of old records that they loved and inventing stuff over the top of it. And it was just wonderful to listen to. There was a freshness and an innocence there that obviously, you know, hip-hop has lost in the last few years. You know, we've got people like Jay-Z talking about how much money they made.
It's all
none of these guys had any money back then.
The formula is set. Much of this set is about a time when there were no rules in hip-hop, and that was what was exciting.
So the first volume alone, you're looking at people like Salt-N-Pepa with Tramp. You're looking at the Sugar Hill Gang with Rapper's Delight, which really put hip-hop on the map
yeah.
as a recording medium. Too Short with the Ghetto. I mean, you're all over the place. The Beastie Boys, early Beastie Boys with Hey Ladies. Boogie Down Productions, which was KRS-One's first group with South Bronx. But the track I want to gravitate toward is Doug E. Fresh with Lottie Dottie.
Oh, yeah.
Doug E. Fresh, the human beatbox. Man making percussive sounds with his mouth. You know, it's fascinating for
yeah.
live audiences to see this. But on this track, we also hear the voice of Slick Rick, who is one of the great comics in hip-hop history. The man was just hilarious. And over the human beatboxing of Doug E. Fresh, really made a name for himself with this particular track. So let's hear it from the Tommy Boy Presents Hip-Hop Essentials on Sound Opinion.
As we go a little something like this. Hit it! You know what? La-di-da-di. La-di-da-di. La-di. Lottie, you know what? Yo, peep this, Lottie Dottie. We like to party. We don't cause trouble. We don't bother nobody. We're just some men that's on the mic. And when we rock up on the mic, we rock the mic. For all of y'all, keeping y'all in health. Just to see you smile and enjoy yourself. Cause it's cool when you cause a cozy condition, Anna, that we create. Cause that's our mission. So listen to what we say. Because this type of shit happens every day. I woke up around 10 o'clock in the morning. I gave myself a stretcher. A morning yawning. Went to the bathroom to wash up. Had some soap on my face and my hand upon a cup. I said, mirror, mirror on the wall. Who is the top choice of them all? There was a rumble dumble. 5 minutes it lasted. The mayor said,
"You are, you conceited bastard."
All right, that concludes our gift giving guide for the year. That is Doug E. Fresh, Lottie Dottie, from the Hip Hop Essentials 12 volume set on Tommy Boy. Man, would I be happy to see that under my Christmas tree this year. I know Jim would as well.
I would indeed, Greg. And there's other stuff we want to recommend for the holiday gift giving season, musically related. We're going to have those listed on the website, soundopinions.org.
Next week, we've got Andy Summers in the show. Andy Summers, the former guitarist in The Police, with a great autobiography, one of the best in recent years, where he lays it all on the line, talks about Sting, talks about life in The Police, and terrific interview with Mr. Summers. I think he was very frank and open about what life in The Police was really like.
And we'll have reviews, Greg, of the new albums by the Deftones and the Clips. Got some people to thank on the way out. Sound Opinions has been produced by Todd Bachman, Matt Spiegel, Jason Saldana, and Robin Lynn. Greg, as you know. We get some technical help from Joe Dassault, some legal assistance from Dino Armiros. Tori Southside Malatia is our executive producer and fearless leader. And Jim Russell is the man in American public media. What are you getting him for Christmas?
He's got to have this funk box, man. What it is!